our support remains up there until the provincial government and my Pachitup First Nations government meet together and discuss what our strategic plan is and to help them understand what our vision is for our forest.
My name is Jackie Lawrence. Today is Thursday, March 4th. Welcome to the Capital Daily Podcast. Today marks a vital day in court for the fight to protect Fairy Creek's old growth forest from logging. Teal Jones Group, the logging company with a license for the area, has filed an injunction with the BC Supreme Court to remove the blockades. That will be in court today. We go back to the very beginning of the story to find out how we got to this point and why this fight is so important. Today's podcast is brought to you by the South Island Prosperity Partnership, the region's economic development agency. Don't miss the Ideas and Impact event on Tuesday, March 16th from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m., free on Zoom, titled Creating a Next Generation Ocean Hub and Cluster on Southern Vancouver Island. Register for Ideas and Impact at southislandprosperity.ca/blue-economy.
Hello, hello, my friends. We're here. We're here to tell Mr. Horgan, John Horgan, our premier, that we need to have him do his job. His job. Yeah. His job was supposed to be what he had promised, to save old growth, to tend to the pipelines, to tend to pollution, to tend to regulate logging in the interests of our children's future. And that, I feel, is what he has to do, and we're here to assert that. And we are not here to pass the laws. We can tell our MLAs that we need to have them through the provincial government to assert the saving of our old growth. And yeah, and leave their dancing with big business and lobbyists and tend to our people, the people of this great province.
You just heard from Pachitup Elder Bill Jones. This was Friday, February 26th. A group of protesters gathered in front of British Columbia Premier John Horgan's community office to demand action. I was there. It was, of course, COVID safe.
Thank you, everyone, for coming out today. And just a reminder to keep your masks on, as we are in the midst of the pandemic.
The protest was organized by the Rainforest Flying Squad, the same group of activists that have organized and maintained the Fairy Creek blockades. The focus of this day's protest is the injunction being sought by Teal Jones Group. That injunction request is being held in court today. The company is seeking to remove the blockades from two different sites until September 4th, and have the RCMP arrest anyone who does not comply. This would force protesters to stand down after 7 months of blockading or be arrested. The fight to protect the old-growth forests is about more than just the environment. This forest, like all old-growth forests in BC, is on Indigenous land. Logging these areas isn't just about harming the environment, it also takes away the choice from Indigenous communities. As you'll hear when I speak to Pachitup member Roxy Jones, the nation has their own logging company, and when companies such as Teal Jones Group log on these lands, they take away the economic benefits from their people. Roxy spoke with me at the protest on Friday about her feelings toward the situation and the injunction. But before we get to that, let's go back to the beginning of this all and give it some context. Torrence Cost is the National Campaign Director of the Wilderness Community. Torrence has been at the front of this fight for years. I spoke with him yesterday and had him take us back to the very beginning of this story. Torrence, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Before we start with the story of Fairy Creek, I want to put this into context. On July 17th, 2019, the BC government announced an independent two-person panel that had been appointed as part of an old-growth strategic review, What prompted this?
What prompted this was decades of passionate, dedicated, and ceaseless activism on this. Old growth logging and the controversy around it, the desire to protect old growth forests. None of these are new things. The Wilderness Committee, where I work, was founded on this issue in 1980. And this campaign has seen various flashpoints throughout the 80s, 90s, early 2000s. And it's not an issue that's gone away. There has been some old growth protected, some wins for this movement. But the more time that's gone on, the more dire this problem has become, because the more scarce these non-renewable ecosystems have become. So the NDP government at that time, which was supported by the Green Party, they were susceptible to this pressure. We talked to lots of MLAs who tell us off the record this is the main issue their constituency office hears about, especially here on the island. And the government, they needed to walk this line to look like they were doing something. Whether they actually will do something, the jury's still out on that. But they needed to be able to tell the public that they were taking action on this because of how popular it is. And so that's what prompted, and that's where this the old growth strategic review and the panel came out of.
In your opinion, was the review adequate?
We panned it at the time as not totally necessary. Public polling shows 90% across BC, 90% support for protecting old growth, which is frankly unheard of. If a public polling issue gets 50 or 60%, that's usually considered a strong majority. 90% is unheard of. There's so few of these forests left that we argued immediate protections, moratoriums, at least temporary, on remaining, especially the most low elevation, productive, valuable old growth forests, then engage nation to nation with the First Nations, include financial support for First Nations and for impacted workers and communities, and start to do the long-term work to plan permanent protection to ensure the survival of these ecosystems. We didn't feel they needed a report to tell them that.
Yeah.
But as reports go, this one is solid. We met with the panelists personally, and hundreds and thousands of people wrote to them. Hundreds of people met with them, and we feel like this is they did a good job of capturing the sentiment. Their recommendations are sound, but so much hinges on how the government will both interpret and respond to those recommendations. So the review was a process that was fine. It was good, but it was largely unnecessary. And as you said, it was July 2019 that it was struck. So, we're within sight of 2 years since. Mm-hmm. And that's 2 years that a lot of these forest ecosystems don't have.
About a month before the review is finished, another report independent of the government comes out, the Viridian report. Did they find anything different? What was the reasoning behind releasing this as well?
This one was to essentially do what the province has never done and what the province didn't ask the panel to do. The province asked the panel to broadly review this and to give them some overarching recommendations. What's needed is recognition that there's old growth and then there's old growth. So there's forest that has never been logged. And then there's the forest that, all of us picture when we close our eyes and think about old growth. And it's the latter that is less rare and far more represented in our current protected area system. So if you look at a place like Vancouver Island, almost half of the protected land on Vancouver Island is in a single park, Strathcona, mm-hmm. in the middle of the island. It's a wonderful park. It's got some beautiful areas. It does have some beautiful low elevation old growth forests, but the majority of it is high subalpine and alpine terrain with less productive old growth forest and a lot of rock and snow. The kind of old growth that's on posters and that goes viral in photos, these unbelievably big trees, that's what's most at risk. And government hasn't differentiated the two in all of its reporting. And so they vastly overrepresent the amount of old growth that's protected and paint a picture that all is well. The Viridian report kind of does that differentiating and explains the difference between the two and explains the ecosystem risk that entails. And the old growth panel's report includes some of their research, some of their graphs. The authors of the Viridian report all met with the old growth panel, so there is some overlap there. But the Viridian report is an important piece from three leading experts in the field as a standalone piece of research. Something that the mm-hmm. government can and definitely should draw on now.
Do you think that the government kind of utilizes the idea that most of the public doesn't understand the difference between productive and maybe not as productive old growth forests, and therefore they've kind of been able to draw a line of, look, we're helping, but really the environmentalists such as yourself, no, this isn't the case.
Definitely. I think they take advantage of that. The old growth maps the province rarely releases maps, but most maps of BC are in just the one dimension. It doesn't show that topography. Mm-hmm. And so, if we were to accurately map the old growth that is protected, you would see it's much higher elevation, and which isn't the only factor, but it's a factor, and the productivity falls as protection increases. So I think they take advantage of that, but it breaks down because a certain amount of people have access to off-road vehicles and access to vision, and when, mm-hmm. when you drive, off a back road, anywhere between Souk and Port Hardy, for example, or Vancouver and Prince George, you can see that, there might be some forest that hasn't been logged way up the hill, mm-hmm. but everything close to the river, everything at low elevation has been logged, at least once already, and that's what makes the areas that haven't really stand out in their scarcity.
What is the importance of focusing on productive old growth forests?
Again, it's that scarcity. So all old growth matters. We need to be protecting samples of all of it. But a lot of high elevation old growth is protected, and even it's not at risk because it's not valuable to the industry. The trees are more expensive to get to, and they're less valuable because they're smaller. Mm-hmm. The wood can be a bit more twisted, and a few other pieces like that make it less at risk. So that's where mm-hmm. focusing on the productive old growth, just by virtue of its accessibility. When we started logging here industrially, the companies, the logging industry took the valley bottoms first because they were the first thing they got to. Mm-hmm. Right? A lot of old growth logging that happens now has only been possible for the last 20 years technologically. A lot of the old growth that could be fallen by hand, again, was taken 80, 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. So the productive old growth, that's the main piece, is just that it's so much scarcer. But also in terms of biodiversity, right? The subalpine forest, the higher elevation, the less productive, the shoreline bog ecosystems are very important. But the high productivity forest with more biomass, it's just more potential for species habitat, for recreational opportunity, for indigenous cultural resources and all those attributes.
So it's spring of 2020, and the government has in hand their report, their review, and also the Viridian report has been released. What has the government done? Do they do anything?
In the spring and summer of 2020, no, they essentially, in terms of concrete changes, they hadn't done anything. According in our conversations with them, they said at this point they were doing the groundwork for the initial package of deferrals that they announced when they did release the report. They said they didn't want to release the report and no action to go along with it. That's kind of their prime rationale for delaying the release 5.5 months. It's also okay. Just a standard government procedure, which, you know, I disagree with, but you know, government seems to be able to get away with at this point. So they were reaching out to the nations in whose territories those deferrals fall. It's 9 areas totaling 353,000 hectares. I'd like to get a bit more into the specifics of that later, because they called it all protected old growth, and neither of those two things are true. But that's what they spent the summer doing. And you know, the minister, ministerial staff and the minister herself, the new minister has said, you know, that process was delayed because of COVID, which, you know, I think we need to have a bit of understanding around, but can't be used unduly as an excuse to delay action indefinitely. So in those months that you're talking about, the months, you know, leading up to the initiation of the Fairy Creek blockades, that's what's happening. Very little information being released publicly, despite the government having this report. The public did get access to the Viridian report, which was published publicly as soon as it was completed. And government is behind the scenes working on these deferrals, plus a couple other minor pieces that they then announced in September.
So you kind of touched on it a little bit, but let's get into it. The deferrals that the government did eventually release, they were subject to some controversy just because it was a little bit misleading in nature. Can you explain that?
So, yeah, you know, they said it was significant because of the total size announced, right? And when we were briefed, you know, less than a full day before the report came out, you know, that the ministry told us, yes, you know, we're deferring logging on 353,000 hectares of old growth. And that sounded exciting. It's close to what the Viridian report earmarked as the most at-risk old growth that's not protected. They set that figure at about 415,000 hectares province-wide. I would, in terms of the forest that needs to get set aside right now so that we can make a plan, I would peg that number at higher than 415,000 hectares, right? I would round it up to capture some areas that aren't technically the most productive, but that are irreplaceable. But, you know, at the end of the day, we're talking about 1 million or so hectares out of 60 million hectares of forest in the province. And the total size of the province is 94 million hectares, but 415,000 hectares was what the Viridian authors, again, experts in their fields, highlighted as the most at-risk forests. And then the government said we're deferring 353,000. And we said, you know, that's those numbers, you know, there's 60,000 hectares difference between them, but that's several thousand hectares. And so our first question was, how much overlap is there? And we were hoping there would be substantial overlap. The government's deferrals only overlap with 3,800 hectares of what was highlighted in the Viridian report as the most at-risk old growth. So 3,800 hectares, that's just about twice the size of the city of Victoria proper, not Greater Victoria, just the city of Victoria. So quite a small area. And so we started to look into what else those deferrals encompassed. And about 100,000 hectares of the 353,000 is second growth forest. And then another 50 or so is non-forest. So less than 200,000 of the 350,000 is actual old growth. Wow. And of that, a huge percentage of it is already protected. And so that's, you know, it's extremely, they deferred the entire land area of Clackwood Sound, right? A massively important area. A third of Clackwood is already in Class A provincial park or other forms of protection. And then a remaining third of that is old growth and the other third is second growth. So, you know, to call it all protected old growth when some of it was already protected. And then later, you know, around a couple months later, we found a government memo that they posted on the website that essentially breaks down what's happening in those deferral areas. And we found out that logging is still allowed in the second growth, logging and road building. So that was an extremely surprising thing, because when we saw, you know, people said a week after the report got released, people said, oh, you know, Torrance, I heard some of these deferral areas are second growth. And I said, yeah, that's right. Around a third, a little less than a third is second growth. That's okay. There's nothing wrong with protecting second growth, right? If there's a little valley outside Revelstoke or on northern Vancouver Island that's, say, you know, 4,000 hectares and 2,000 hectares of it has been logged and the other half hasn't, there's nothing wrong with protecting the whole watershed and letting the whole ecosystem recover. That's not what government's doing. And it's what they said they were doing. So deferrals, they're deferred for 2 years. The deferrals expire in August 2022. They're not all old growth. It's not all protected. And some of the old growth that is protected was already protected.
Wow.
The Premier of British Columbia, the highest voice of government, said on the debate stage in the fall election, we protected 353,000 hectares of old growth. The amount of factual inaccuracies in that statement, in a statement that short, it's impressive, really. And we've brought this to the minister's attention that one of the panel's key recommendations was the need to improve honesty, improve transparency, and rebuild public trust in government's management of forests. And the government starting off this process by being intentionally misleading and factually incorrect. It's the complete opposite of the spirit of the panel's recommendations. And it's one of the most frustrating moves that the government's made on this file in the last 6 months.
And we'll just take a quick break for a word from our sponsor. Today's podcast is brought to you by the South Island Prosperity Partnership, the region's economic development agency. Don't miss the Ideas and Impact event on Tuesday, March 16th from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m., free on Zoom, titled Creating a Next Generation Ocean Hub and Cluster on Southern Vancouver Island. Norway-based Christian Rangan, a global expert in strategy and transformation, discusses the potential of Canada's Pacific. Plus, they'll explore growing a thriving ocean hub right here on the South Island to take advantage of opportunities in the $3 trillion global blue economy. Register for Ideas and Impact at southislandprosperity.ca/blue-economy. Do you want to help Capital Daily support local journalism and connect your business with our engaged and curious Greater Victoria audience of almost 50,000? Email our partnerships team at advertising@capitaldaily.ca. So let's go back just nearly a month before the government's report is made public. August 7th is the day that the Ferry Creek blockade was established. At the time, what was their main concern and what was and is their goal?
So the Ferry Creek blockades, they're an expression of that frustration that we just spoke about, of that lack of public trust. You know, people had been told a year prior that government was doing a review, that things were going to change, that they were being listened to. And people that care about this spend time out in the forest and they saw these trees continuing to fall. Anecdotally, we've heard, you know, in COVID with less people getting out and about, the logging companies were going harder than ever. They were immediately classified as essential, and logging is one thing that has not slowed down at all in the pandemic. And people were feeling that the direness of the situation. And as someone that works for an organization dedicated to this issue, I'm in a unique position to speak to why these blockades form. They form because people feel there's no other option. right? The Wilderness Committee, we encourage people to meet with their elected officials, to phone their elected officials, to write their elected officials, to send comment to consultations like the Old Growth Review. We essentially tell people to engage in the process through the venues that the government provides for them to do so. And when those processes and those venues don't result in any change, of course people are going to take matters into their own hands. And so that frustration boiled over in the beginning of August after yet another spring and summer of dynamite being blasted, roads being built, and trees coming down. And Ferry Creek, I mean, you know, the Google Earth photos are when the blockades first started, I shared a Google Earth photo, kind of dropped at a 45 degree angle and looking at Vancouver Island from the perspective of being out in the strait and looking at the island. And it's one of the most clicked on images I've shared on social media. And it's just like a grainy Google Earth image. And it's because you see what the term the last intact watershed on Southern Vancouver Island looks like in practice, right? So you can see, you know, from Port Renfrew back towards Lake Cowichan, continuing further back towards the east coast of Vancouver Island. And then in the background, you can see the coast mountains outside Vancouver in the distance. And in the whole image, you know, it's light green of younger second growth forests and brown of recent clear cuts. And wow. Then there's in the center of it, there's this dark emerald green leaf shape that is the Ferry Creek watershed. And it leaps off the image as the only part of the frame that covers hundreds of thousands of hectares that doesn't have evidence of industrial logging. And, you know, those images got shared, that the folks at Ferry Creek were aware of them. And then the road plans building into the road plans to go in and literally change that picture were discovered, and folks had enough of it. And they yeah. posted up on the two potential road accesses into the valley and have been there since. So, wow. You know, it's for years, a huge component of my job is trying to convince people to speak to those in power, to speak to decision makers, to call on the people that make the rules to make better rules. And, you know, in recent years, despite government talking about it, that faith, it just fades away. More and more people say, oh, you know, writing the premier is not going to do anything. Meeting with the forest minister is not going to do anything. And that sense of desperation is what leads to movements like this. And so, you know, the resolve and the grit of the folks to be out there through the winter, it's not surprising to me because I'm close. I see this frustration on a day to day. And I don't think the Minister of Forest does.
Now, this is a crossover issue because it's an environmental issue, but also, like all forests, this is on Indigenous land. Part of the recommendations were to better include Indigenous leaders in the decision-making for the land. Was this a failure?
Yeah, I mean, the main concerns from a lot of Indigenous Nations post-report has been that they weren't consulted enough. I see it less as a failure and more as an intentional tactic to delay the pace of change by this government. Since the report, you know, we've said, look, this report provides you with the rationale you need, the scientific rationale to show some precaution and to make sure the last of these endangered old growth forests aren't lost while we're talking about it. Mm-hmm. And now government can say, hey, you know, we need to consult with Indigenous Nations. And we're not going to protect any forests without consulting with Indigenous Nations.
Wow.
And it's a strong position for them to take because it is the standard which should be applied. We shouldn't be protecting forests without the nations on whose land it is agreeing to it and leading it. But that standard has to go both ways. We also shouldn't be logging
mm-hmm. yeah.
without those nations express permission and approval and involvement. And we are. Mm-hmm. And so for government to say, we're going to continue to log trees without consent, but we're not going to protect any of them with consent. It is a double standard. And that is a problem. And at the end of the day, a lot of nations are going to choose to log some old growth, and that choice should be theirs, but so should the choice to protect forests. So I think that how government is doing on consulting and doing their duty to indigenous nations, that judgment can only be made by those nations. But I can say that the need to get it right and to ensure that protecting of these non-renewable forests is being done with respect to indigenous rights, and that process is in the spirit of reconciliation and that is working towards advancing decolonization. That is all true, but the same has to be applied to logging. We can't keep logging the last of these forests because we're limiting the ability to make either choice, right? There's there's a lot of nations that 10 years, 20 years from now, or even now, won't be able to make the choice to either protect or log the old growth on their territory because the old growth on their territory is gone or will be gone.
Can you tell me about Teal Jones? This is the company that has the license for the Ferry Creek area.
What can I tell you about Teal Jones? So they pride themselves on positioning themselves as a family business, which they are. Their two chief executives are two brothers, whose last name is Jones. And that's where the name of the company comes from. It was founded by their father, I believe. They are a big company, right? They have two mills on the Fraser River, and they have a number of mills in the United States. And they hold tenure. Their biggest tenure is TFL 46 on southwestern Vancouver Island. They also have some tenure in the Fraser Canyon, and I believe on Haida Gwaii still. So they are a big player in coastal logging, and because of the concentration of low elevation productive old growth forest on TFL 46, they're one of the biggest players when it comes to destroying non-renewable old growth forests. They're really defensive of that, and they use what they do well, which is local production, to excuse what they don't, which is cutting the last of the old growth. So a lot of wood is sent overseas. A lot of it is sent out of BC. They employ several hundred people at their mills in Surrey, turning wood from BC into value-added wood products. That part of it, I think, is admirable, and I think, you know, should be pointed to as a positive, and as something that can be around in the future. But the logging of the last low elevation old growth forest won't be around in the future. So we need to be moving away from it now. And the company has just shown no interest in doing that. And if they can say, look, we can't keep our people employed without liquidating these ecosystems, then what's their plan? Are they just, I mean, the brothers are quite old. Are they just going to close the business once they're at retirement age or once that's not fair to their workers at all. So, they are defensive and they are unscrupulous in terms of what's off limits. So their tenure extends up into the Walbran, which is the kind of, you know, a real longstanding focal point of the environmental movement. And, you know, they have logging planned in the heart of it. The environmental movement, grassroots activists and groups like the Wilderness Committee have kept them at bay in the Walbran for now. But, you know, from Walbran to Eden Grove to Ferry Creek, the Kaikoos Valley, these are some of the best last low elevation forests in this country. And Teal Jones has tenure to them, and they want to get those trees on the ground. They have sought an injunction before, so they were blockaded in 2015, 2016 in the Walbran. They sought an injunction there, and because of the amount of work Wilderness Committee does in the Walbran, the organization and myself personally were named on that injunction. And they did eventually in January of 2016 clear those blockades. They arrested one land defender there there and did some logging, not in the heart of the Walbrand, but quite close to it. And so, you know, when it comes to controversial logging companies cutting down some of the best old growth left, Teal Jones is at the top of the list. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of us that are familiar with them are honestly surprised that they waited this long to seek their injunction.
Yeah, you mentioned the injunction. So that the Ferry Creek blockades have been up for about 7 months now. And it was just a couple weeks ago that we got news that the injunction case was going to court. And that's happening tomorrow. So we're going to find out. Are you expecting that to pass, by the way?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The legal system in BC is such that, you know, it's built to favor this. Mm-hmm. The Wilderness Committee imposes injunctions as a tactic as a legal entity as a whole, injunctions of this kind, because, you know, the decision about as a charity that doesn't participate or organize blockades, there's still a tactic that's utilized on a lot of the campaigns and that have been utilized on a lot of the campaigns we work on over the years. But the decision to make, you know, doing something on a logging road, blocking loggers on a logging road, legal or illegal, that should be made by democratically elected people, not mm-hmm. not by a judge, you know. And I think that it's a way for government to hide behind criminalizing certain forms of protest and certain mm-hmm. forms of dissent. And yeah, you know, I'd need to chat with a lawyer friend on this, but I'm unaware of an injunction other than recently around churches and disobeying COVID orders. But that, you know, it's not common that resource extraction companies seek an injunction and get denied. So I'd expect, you know, I think that, you know, the plan is to try and seek an extension of the process. I'd like to hope that's possible. You know, it's hard to make mm-hmm. for a legal layperson to make all these, you know, accurate predictions of what's going to happen because it's so obvious. But I think that you know, if they don't get their injunction tomorrow, they will have it soon. Mm-hmm. And then from there, you know, I assume it's up to Teal Jones, right? I know that they have to. I know that you know, they have to prove that the injunction's being violated, right? They can't just call the RCMP and send them in, you know, for a general clearance of the roads, right? It's not illegal to be out there. It's not illegal yeah. to be out there witnessing. It's not illegal to be out there protesting. Should the injunction be granted, it will just be illegal to block loggers. And mm-hmm. that can't happen if Teal Jones isn't sending their crews, their contractors, actually. They don't actually do any loggings themselves. They contract it all out. Mm-hmm. But if they're not sending their contractors out to go and build the roads and follow the blocks, then I don't believe the injunction can be violated. So in terms of when, you know, things can heat up out there, it's really hard to predict because that ball's in Teal Jones's court.
What are the next steps for protecting the area if/when this is going to pass?
I mean, I think that at a certain point, like, we do need provincial political leadership on this. This is the result. It's you know, fairly poetic that this is happening on the ground right at the time that the 6 months anniversary from when the government released their report. So they released mm-hmm. it on September 11th. So March 11th, next Thursday, will be 6 months since that came out. There's 6 months deadlines from the panel in that report, mm. you know, protect, ensure that those rare old growth forests, a lot of which are currently being protected by blockades on TFL 46, ensure that these forests aren't lost while we talk about it. Government hasn't done that. And that's not just, there's not no consequences for that. The consequences are public dissent. And so there needs to be some accountability on the part of government. And I think that's highlighted by the fact that this isn't in some obscure corner of the province. It's in the Premier of British Columbia's riding. I think there's been of the 30 or so premiers of BC, there's been less than half a dozen with forest tenure in their riding. In their region, for the fact that most of them, their ridings have been in Vancouver or Kelowna. And I believe, again, I'd need to check with a couple folks, but I believe Horgan could become the first premier with logging blockaders arrested in his riding.
Wow.
So, you know, the fact that they commissioned this report in the name of going through due process and not protecting any old growth out of hand, which is an absurd notion in itself. And they got this report that makes these fairly specific recommendations and sets these timelines to do certain things by 6 months. They're not doing them. And now there's this conflict and controversy and people potentially putting their freedom on the line out on the back roads. That's not right. And that's the government's fault. And they need to take responsibility for that. And the public needs to help hold them accountable. So it's an important time to pay attention to the Fairy Creek blockades, to follow those groups for ways to get involved. And for our part, we're going to be ramping up public accountability, encouraging people. We want every MLA in BC's phone to be ringing off the hook with this. We want their offices to be inundated with meeting requests because they only make change on the things that they think they can't get away with ignoring. So the job of everyone that cares about this is to let them know that this isn't something that they can ignore.
Where can the people listening right now find your organization?
Find us online at wildernesscommittee.org, on Facebook or Twitter, at Wilderness Committee or at Wildernews. And those are ways that that you can get in touch, and we'll be posting regularly about this, visiting and documenting from the blockades as we can, framing this as the place it holds in this province-wide crisis of old growth liquidation.
Torrence, thank you so much, not only for your time but also for your work.
Thanks so much for having me on.
We're now caught up back to Friday, February 26th. The protest outside of Premier Horgan's office. I'm about to speak to Roxy Jones of the Pachidot First Nation.
Hello. My name is Jackie. I'm the producer for the Capital Daily podcast. I was wondering if you might want to have a few words.
Sure, sounds good.
Thank you so much for coming up over here and talking to me.
Yes.
So can you first off just tell me why you're here?
I'm here because I'm quite upset in regards to what's going on in regards to the injunction. I feel as though it needs to stay, our defenders need to stay up there until we have time to properly consult with our provincial government around extraction of resources in our community. I want to help them understand that we're not happy with what's going on currently. And we would like for the provincial government to understand what our vision is for the Pachidot First Nation, provided that we're in our final stages of treaty.
How do you feel about John Horgan right now?
I really do. I have no hard feelings against him whatsoever. I see him as a pretty respectable man, and I'm sure that if he were to hear what our community's position is, that he would respect our wishes.
So today you're still hoping that you're going to send that message. What's the message that you want to send?
That each and every protester around here, we thank them for the work that they do. Myself as a resident, a community member, I do appreciate the work that they do. But I also want people to understand that we have our own form of government, and we have our own relationship with the province that should not be dictated or interfered with. Although we appreciate the support, that acknowledgement needs to happen in regards to our own strategic planning and our vision for our forestry.
If the injunction were to go through, if the injunction were to happen and the protesters were to be forced off the premises, what would your next steps be?
calling John Horgan directly and speaking to him in regards to what our concerns are around our community forestry plan and our strategic plan, and also addressing the shared resource agreement that was signed in 2017. We need to help him understand that that was not a communal decision, and we do not agree with that decision, and none of our resources should be shared amongst neighboring nations, especially when it's being extracted from our own community.
Ultimately, what do you want for the forest?
We need to preserve and protect our culturally modified trees and connect with our community members to help the province understand that these lands need to remain intact for our future generations, and also that there's an ecotourism opportunity for us to help get out of poverty. So it's really important that we are a part of the decisions that are made, and also to acknowledge that we do have our own forestry company, Kalayat and Cuisto, and they are completely capable, and in partnership with our nation and our community, we know what's best for our people and our community and our traditional territories.
Definitely,
so
yeah.
That's what I want to see, is that our governance is acknowledged and our community's concerns are acknowledged. And we need them to understand that we do have a vision, and that's mainly around control of our own traditional territory and lands and compensation.
Awesome.
Compensation for lands, and also how it's also not fair that we need to acknowledge that there's a lot of resources being extracted currently by all of the other forestry companies, and it's not beneficial to our community members,
mm-hmm,
or our future.
And then lastly, how do you feel about the show of support? Because this is amazing. Well, how do you feel?
I'm pretty impressed. I appreciate everyone's help in regards to this. I'm not surprised. I feel pretty good about it.
That's great.
As long as people acknowledge and understand what our position is as a nation and our economic development endeavors, you know.
Yeah.
So this is where I'm at right now.
Great. Thank you so much. Appreciate this.
Premier Horgan made a campaign promise to protect old-growth forests.
My constituency includes some of the most spectacular old growth in the province. I understand the value of that to British Columbia.
So far, that has gone unfulfilled in the eyes of activists and community members. Like Torrens Cost explained, of the 94 million hectares that make up British Columbia, 60 million hectares is forest. And of that, there was only 1 million hectares of prime old growth left. That roughly 1% is all the reports and activists are calling on to be protected. There has been little progress. Indigenous people are losing their forests before they have the chance to make their own decisions. The protesters plan on continuing this fight regardless of an injunction. Some speakers on the February 26th protest even offered advice and recommended workshops to those willing to be arrested for the cause.
Chris Hermes supported us through the arrest process by having workshops, and he's going to have another one coming up.
In a review of over 100 injunction cases involving First Nations across Canada, it was found that 81% of all filed against First Nations by corporations were granted, while 81% filed against corporations by First Nations were denied. Injunctions have seen a steep increase in the past 20 years in Canada, and nearly all relate to resource and development. We'll be following this story closely today, and we'll give updates as they happen. You can follow me on Twitter at Jackie Lamport for up-to-date information. This evening, we'll post a bonus episode to explain what happens. And in today's Capital Daily News Review, Victoria Council votes today on approving a temporary use permit to build 30 shipping container homes in Royal Athletic Park for people without homes. There are currently 34 tents in the Caledonia site. $500,000 for the developer Arise to build the homes was successfully crowdfunded this winter. The city is looking at allocating restart grants for sewer and water facilities and eventual takedown in 2022, as well as money for 24-hour supports. If council moves to the next step today, there will be a public assembly on March 18th, and the containers could be in place by next month. Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Capital Daily Podcast. If you enjoyed it, please leave a rating and give us a review. We post new shows every Monday to Friday, so feel free to subscribe as well. My name is Jackie Lamport. This is the Capital Daily Podcast. We'll talk to you tomorrow.